This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, How We Eat. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. What we eat or not eat is personal. We make choices for many reasons, our own health and sometimes the health of the planet. The way we grow food in America releases a lot of greenhouse gases. Not as much as burning fossil fuels for cars or planes, but still, it's a significant amount. And when you drill down on greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, almost a third of it comes from livestock, like cows. Some people are either not eating meat or cutting down their consumption to save the planet. Does it make a difference? Alan Yu looked into this.
Tiffany Stair only became a vegan 2 years ago.
All through my life, I ate meat 3 times a day, if not more. I love the taste of it.
But she realized she can still enjoy the flavors she likes without using animal products.
So I'm mixing up my marinade.
As we talk, she makes a spaghetti carbonara. Instead of bacon, eggs, and cheese, she makes it with tofu, mushrooms, and cashews, which she blends into a creamy sauce.
Ready? It's kind of loud.
One of her big reasons for giving up bacon and eggs is that she doesn't want to contribute to climate change. She evangelizes for a vegan diet in all sorts of ways, down to the black t-shirt she has on.
And it says, "The world used to be cooler. Fight climate change and go vegan."
Okay, let's put that in a little context. Even if the entire US stops eating meat tomorrow, it still doesn't do as much as switching to wind power and getting off fossil fuels for cars and planes. But Tiffany's argument is that what you eat is something you can do as an individual to help slow climate change.
By not eating animals, you can make an impact right now, 3 times a day.
A group of scientists from around the world published a paper in a journal describing the diet we should be on for our health and the sake of the planet. They concluded you can still eat meat, but maybe a little less. The scientists recommend 1 serving of red meat a week, and for poultry and fish, not more than 2 servings a week. Marco Springman helped come up with that diet, which he calls flexitarian. He studies environmental sustainability and public health at the University of Oxford in England.
So if everybody moved to a flexitarian diet, we could approximately halve our greenhouse gas emissions related to the food system.
Meaning all of the carbon dioxide, methane that comes from raising cows, chickens, pigs. That includes reducing the emissions from growing food for farm animals, reducing their waste, and yes, those famous cow burps. Marco says that all could be cut in half. But one meat producer that I met said to fight climate change, we should also think about how we're growing meat.
Welcome to our farm.
I'm at Willow Run Farm, 40 acres in Pennsylvania, just outside Philadelphia. Farmer Deanne Boyer has around 40 cattle, and she says they are part of a climate change solution. There is no mooing. Deanne says that means her cows are happy. They're busy munching. There's lots of open space. The idea is that cows just wander freely, eat the grass, and excrete on the land just enough to keep it fertile and support more grass.
It's really a neat system. If we look at the ecosystem of how a farm can work within the natural environment and the natural processes.
The farm is covered in grass, which absorbs carbon dioxide. Less of that gas in the air means less of it to contribute to climate change. Deanne rotates the herd so no patch of grass gets overwhelmed by the cows. She says if she were farming cattle on an industrial scale, this would be totally different.
This whole area would be filled with cattle, as far as you can see. There would be no grass at all. It would just be dirt, mud, manure, concrete.
She's also growing a little forest on the edge of her farm with lots of native trees and shrubs. The forest filters water coming off her farm and soaks up more carbon dioxide.
That's really where I focus on fighting the issue of climate change, is by using my land in a more responsible way.
Today, lots of consumers want to eat more responsibly. And in upstate New York, Leah Penniman farms her land in such a way that animals and crops support each other.
Pasture-raised animals do some magic alchemy for us.
She's got chickens, but she doesn't have to grow food to feed them. They feed off the land.
They can turn grasses and brambles and bark into food.
Raising chickens on pasture is an indigenous practice that goes back thousands of years. Leah says it's better for the environment because you're not growing as much extra feed for the chickens. But it probably means we won't be able to grow as much meat as large-scale industrial farms, so we'd have to eat less meat and perhaps pay more. Leah says when you're on her farm, you get a direct and visceral sense of the cost and generally what it takes to get an animal to your plate.
Naturally, that is not something we would waste or overexploit. Traditional diets, and this is a generalization, but in most places, traditional diets really view meat as a spice or a special occasion food. You don't eat 4 ounces of meat breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
Seven, eight.
In Virginia, Chris Newman takes the same pasture approach in raising his chickens and pigs. But besides his farming practices, he's changing the way he feeds his own family.
We really were like an eat a pork chop every single day kind of family.
But now he's following the flexitarian diet that scientists have recommended for the sake of our health and the planet. That's the one where you get one serving of red meat a week.
It's difficult, you know, on a farm because we've got freezers outside that are full of a few thousand pounds of meat, and it's pretty tempting to just, you know, run out there and grab something real quick when you're hungry or trying to figure something out.
To cut down, he's relying on tricks like using all the bones and organs from an animal to make broth and soup. He did the math and figured out the annual meat quota for him, his wife, and 2 children. But he's also thinking about the seasons and what meats are available during different times of year. For example, he says it might make sense to eat more local fish in the summer and fall, and beef and pork in the fall and winter. Chris says this diet is also a way of getting back to his father's Piscataway Indian roots.
It's actually interesting and kind of fun and almost, me being an indigenous person, to think about the seasonality of diets that my ancestors dealt with and how important and integral that was to just their way of life. It's actually made this an interesting challenge and not so much of an arduous one.
Chris says if a meat farmer like him can follow the same kind of low meat diet that scientists recommend, so can you.
Let's show people that it doesn't have to be awful. Let's put our money where our mouth is. Let's do it ourselves in a way that can make meat, frankly, more of a celebratory thing that you really appreciate and love and consume in healthy amounts.
It's one thing to make a personal choice about your own diet, but most of us don't want to be told what we cannot eat. And farmer Leah Penniman says that would be the wrong thing to do.
It's very dangerous to get into this idea of a one-size-fits-all diet or recommendation that's imperialist and arrogant.
Well-known climate scientist Michael Mann says advocating for a particular diet could even run the risk of losing support in the fight against climate change.
I don't want to see us legislating, legislating or policing those sorts of decisions, literally telling people what they can and cannot eat. I think that if we go down that road, that's the surest path to inaction on climate, because we will alienate the very same people we're trying to bring on board as we make this monumental transition away from fossil fuels.
That story was reported by Alan Yu.